My name is Danny Poirier Larson. I work as the curator of birds and training at Southwick Zoo.
Hello, I'm John Rossi. I'm a touring drummer with a passion for animal conservation. When I'm on the road, I spend as much time as possible visiting zoos, aquariums, and conservation organizations. Now, I want to share those places with you. I'll be talking to keepers, vets, conservationists, anyone who can help me in my mission of connecting my people to animals through their people. Join me on my raw safari. Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Raw Safari Podcast. Y'all, I'm so happy. I'm so happy right now. I normally share my, like, personal info stuff on the zoo news stuff, but I have to start off and tell y'all, for those of you that have been listening or following online, Buzz, my new tiny puppy, is home, and Buzz is currently asleep on my lap as I am recording this intro. I am so happy. As a matter of fact, I'm recording this on the mics that I usually use when I'm out on the road, not on my fancy setup upstairs, because Buzz fell asleep in my lap when I was editing this interview, and now Buzz is in my lap, and I'm so happy. Okay, but enough about that. Anyway, if y'all are here, then y'all are here for an interview, and oh boy, do I have a good one for y'all this week. So, you know the name. If you are a fan of this podcast and have done any back listening at all, you know the name Danny Poirier Larson. She is the mother of birds at Southwick Zoo. She has been my most frequent guest and has also co-hosted the podcast a couple of times, and I just love this woman to death. So when I went to Providence to do last week's episode, I made plans just to get together with Danny, just to hang out. And then I was like, oh, hey, should we do another episode? It's been a while since you've been a guest. And so we set up my laptop and my mics in her kitchen, and we just started talking, and it turned into a full hour plus conversation about training and the experience that we had had earlier in the day, because of course I went and hung out with Russell Crowe and the other birds at Southwick Zoo. And it was just a fantastic time. And I think y'all will really enjoy this one. We go deep on a lot of training topics, but I think in a very approachable way and with a lot of fun stories, just kind of about birds and Danny and me. And towards the end, there's a pretty cool announcement. Something's going on in Danny's life that you'll get to learn about on here. So I'm really looking forward to sharing this with y'all. Now, I have to tell you, I decided to leave in the start of our attempt at an interview, and that's exactly how I'm going to phrase this, because it was an attempt. We had a lot of fun from the minute, I mean, honestly, we hung out for hours that day and we're already having a blast. But from the minute I hit record, we were laughing and picking on each other, and it's just the most us. So if for some reason that's not your thing, skip ahead 5 minutes once the interview starts and we will be into normal animal stuff. But I think y'all will get a kick out of this. And Danny and I use a lot of adult language with each other because turns out we're adults. But I'm going to go ahead and bleep the naughty bits here so that if you're listening with younger company, you won't hear any naughty words, though we do talk about some adult topics. So, yeah. All right. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Don't forget to follow along on the socials at Raw Safari, at Raw Safari Pod on the TikTok machine. If you want to support the pod, you can do so by going to patreon.com/Raw Safari. But without further ado, here is my latest interview with just one of my favorite humans, Danny Poirier Larson of Southwick Zoo.
Oh, I hit something else in addition to record.
It's red. It's
good. Hit the power button too.
Yeah, but it didn't turn off, so you're good. Okay, cool. So those are recording.
What if this
falls recording here?
Off my jacket.
Okay, and then
it's not. Oh, It's not sticky.
No, it's fine. It is fine where it is.
It's going to fall.
Oh, okay. Well, then it's not fine. Here, if you want to.
I'll go like
it
this.
It has a magnet on the back, and you can, like, magnet it to your shirt.
Is that too close?
No.
Nope, that works well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Cool, cool, cool. Just, you know, don't smack it with your hands when you talk with your hands. So.
If anything, I'll smack the table.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going to clap so that I can sync up all the audio when I do this and then start talking.
What do you mean?
You know what a clap is, right?
Yeah, but how does that work?
So I go like this. And now I hit record at a different time than you did and this. But I can now see the clap because it's a super big, super thin line.
Oh.
So then I take the audio ones. I see the super big,
that's
super thin line.
That's what I needed.
Yeah.
Think the of explanation, it. Not yeah. the sass.
Oh. I was going to say, think of it like a primate penis. And it's just very big and long. And then you just line them up.
I'm going to run away in the opposite direction so fast.
Beep.
Interview.
God, the shit that I cut is always so much better than
this. Beep.
Some podcasts do a thing for their patrons where they put the unedited interview no matter what happened.
Hmm.
And I'm like, I could never do that.
You'd get sued.
I'm sued.
Just kidding.
No, guests would get sued.
If I clapped right now, would you kill me?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to. I just was curious.
As a matter of fact, one of the cutest things that ever happened on my podcast was
you clapped and then they clapped.
Well, no, I explained it and I was already recording and I was
talking to my friend
Natalie.
He got nervous and they were just like.
I go, okay, so I'm going to clap and blah, blah, blah. I explained it. And she goes, can't I clap? I go, what? And she's like, I want to clap. And I was like, okay, you can clap. So she clapped. She goes, yay, and clapped. And I was like, that is the cutest thing.
Aww.
Yeah. So, all right. Oh, goody. My mommy texted me. Let's see what's up quick.
And that's the cutest thing that's ever happened.
Okay. So, all right. Cool. I'm not even responding to that
beep.
Right now. So let's start talking.
Okay. Sariemas.
It's actually Sriremas. There are four R's in it. A lot of people
what?
Don't realize that. I don't know. So, all right. Let's start off, as always, by you telling people who you are, where you work, and what you do there.
My name is Dani Poirier Larson.
Already hitting the table.
Sorry. Did you tell me not to do that?
I weirdly did.
I hit the... You did tell me not to do that?
Yes. We had a whole conversation about this. I said, don't hit the mic. And you said, I'll probably hit the table. And I was like, yeah, don't do that either. But I know
I didn't hear you say don't do that either. I was just thinking about the clap. You really... Okay.
Did I give you the clap?
You did give me the clap. Wait, what? And then I said, what would happen if I clapped? Would you get mad? And you were like, no. And then I was like, okay, I'm not going to. I was just curious if you would get mad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all good. No, I mean, you get the joke of, did I give you the clap, right?
Oh, no, I don't understand.
That's an STD.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, Danny, because you just went with it.
This is coming
out. This is gangbusters.
We're never going to make it.
You're not even going to start.
You're going to be here till midnight? Okay, so.
I can sleep on your couch. It's
anyway. Oh, we shine. Okay, so should we just start over?
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Dani Poirier Larson.
You're dabbing the beep game again. The fact that we actually make episodes that are good is just astonishing.
And I was staring you in the face while I was doing it.
I know. It was amazing.
Well, I don't remember how to do this. I'm rusty. All right. I'm ready.
Oh, real quick.
Yeah.
Are we announcing?
We can.
Okay, just checking.
Maybe not the name, though.
No. I don't know.
That's you don't even know the name?
No.
So why would we say that?
I already forgot. It's Raina 2.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Raina squared. Shine squared.
I like it.
Okay. Now I can't. This has gone too far in the wrong direction. Oh, no. All right. Should I just go?
Go.
Okay. My name is Dani Poirier Larson. I work as the curator of birds and training at Southwick Zoo.
Yeah, and you're also in charge of?
Birds.
Interns?
Interns. I was like, Shine? Raina? I don't know.
You're in charge of many things.
Lots of things.
Yes, yes. So hello, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Yay.
As always.
Yay. So for those listening, in full disclosure, Dani and I planned on hanging out today, and we did, and getting dinner. And then I was like, ooh, should we record a podcast? And we have not talked at all about what we're going to talk about, and she's been on a bunch. I don't really know
better.
Where this is going.
I know better.
Yeah, we never know
we
where
never
this is
know.
Going. So, but it will be fun, I'm sure. So let's start off by talking about what we did today.
Okay.
So I got to come and hang out with you and some people and some burbs. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and there was some cool training stuff going on. And since I'm always fascinated by training, mm-hmm. why don't you kind of share with the listening public what we did?
With the class?
Yes.
Okay. So I had a little bit of a plan. I knew John was going to want to see Russell in action. I recently started training Russell outside of his winter holding space. John's shaking his hands around like a little fan. It's very cute. I was actually inspired to do this by Amy Fennell. Shout out to Amy.
Amy!
Who came to the zoo on a day that I wasn't working. It was very tragic, very sad. But fortunately, our good friend Emily was working and gave her a tour, brought her into the bird room. And Amy took one look at the high ceilings and went, oh my God, you could do so much awesome flight training in here. And Emily told me this. And I was like, oh my God, that's the one thing that we really don't do. We take the parrots out in that room. We do flight training with the parrots. And stuff. It's very horizontal though. And then if we do any type of vertical flights, it's like on and off tables or ladders or things that are like super OSHA safe. Don't worry anybody. So we do that type of stuff just to build strength, but I've never gotten any of my really good flyers out flying in that room. And mostly because I've always just been afraid of a corvid flying around with a bunch of parrots near him. So I was like, you know what? I think we can do this though. I think Russell has progressed enough in his training. He's paying a lot more attention to me. I don't think he really cares about any of these parrots who are well secured inside their housing anyway. Like, what's the worst that could happen? And so I started training him to fly onto this really lovely stool that was also inspired by the NEI crew. They've given me so many good ideas and inspiration.
They are amazing.
They are amazing. And so I trained him to fly onto this stool, and we used that stool for him coming out of his cage. And then I'm going on a tangent here. I'm going on a total tangent.
It's a good tangent, though. We're talking about training
Russell.
Russell Crowe's my favorite.
I know. He's a lot of people's favorites. He's my favorite.
Yeah.
I finally admit that now.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. So we were doing this. Well, I planned on doing this training with Russell. At first, I was like, you know what? This is going to kind of be a big thing because he really likes John.
Yeah, we are friends. Yeah. It is mutual, which
is
nice.
It is very, very much Russell pays a lot of attention to John when he's around. And so I was like, this is kind of a big thing because this is the first winter that I've been training him outside of his holding space. And it's actually probably going to only benefit his training to have an opportunity for him to practice with John in the room. So at first I was just going to do some dollar bill retrieve inside his holding. But then I was like, no, no, no. I think we're fine. I think it's okay. You got your shenanigans out with him. You walked around. You said hi. You guys caught up. You had like a really long conversation.
We had like a 5-minute conversation.
Yeah, there was a lot going on for a bit.
You guys just kind of left us alone, which I appreciate.
Yeah, that needed to happen. You both needed to get it out of your system. Mm-hmm. And so we were going to train Russell last. That also has to happen because Russell likes to find things on the ground. And so I have to train the parrots first, let them poop, clean up after all their mess that they make because they're parrots. And then I sweep up the floors and then I take Russell out. So we trained Russell last. He was great. He was a rock star. We trained some of the other birds before that. We trained our yellow-naped Amazon Brock, who also really liked John. What the heck? We trained our blue and gold macaw Henry, who liked John so much that I ended up having to end the session because I thought it was going to be such great and good productive training. And it was. No training session is a bust as long as you're in control of it as much as you can be. When I started to realize that I was completely out of control, I said, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. And I put her home.
And let's explain real quick for people that are listening who don't know bird behavior like you do, and like I'm starting to, like, how could you tell that Henry was just in love with me? Because Henry was just in love with me.
So like, her body language is so, so, so telltale when she sees somebody that she really likes. With parrots, we see a lot of eye pinning. So we see dilution of the pupils, so they constrict. And so that's really obvious. We see different feather postures and positions. But it's really interesting because a lot of this body language also looks like aggression if you don't know what the motivating factors are. So If a bird was behaving this way and displaying for you the way that Henry was today, I still wouldn't say, hey, John, why don't you go ahead and step up Henry? Because an overstimulated bird like that, it can lead to aggression so quickly. So we still don't want to do that. But so Henry's feathers were out. She does this high-pitched chirp. She starts bobbing her head up and down. I think I made the comment too. I was like, her eyes are going to protrude out of her head. Those things are bulging. Like, she was just so, there was so much eyeball activity going on. She was vocalizing every time. I kind of gave John the instruction to just like do his thing. So you were like talking, telling some stories, and
wouldn't shut up. Like,
I told you not to stop though, because like, Henry does tend to get distracted by people who look like you when she's collecting donations in our shows. And so it was good training for her. A lot of times we like to alter the antecedents to get the best behavior out of her, but she had progressed to the point where I was like, we need to add this antecedent because this will be good for her. But we're also playing around with the behavior because we have a new donation bin this year. And so there was some criteria that she needed to master. And so at one point I was like, okay, you know what? Never mind. I changed my mind. I actually do want you to shut up for a minute. And I want to see if I can get her back because she's so far gone right now. And so I was like, hey, to one of my coworkers, I'm like, Hope, can you get me a wooden dowel? I need a target. I need to ask for something else to get her back, get her attention back. And so she did for a little bit. And then we tried dollar bills again. And Henry was just like, John, talk to me more, John. Tell more stories, John. I want to hear it all. And so I was like, Henry, you're going home. Like, this isn't productive.
I'm basically making this podcast for Henry because if everyone was listening as attentively as she
her was. Enrichment for the day, I'll just play this podcast for her. Full blast on our Bluetooth.
Absolutely.
She'll be so happy.
I do have to point out that in 4 years of friendship, Danny has been waiting to tell me to shut up with good reason for a long time. Now, don't get me wrong. Danny has told me to shut up many a times. But this time she actually had a good reason. And I think there was a lot of
I didn't have a good reason the other time.
I'm very interesting.
I'm sure I had a good reason. You had to have.
Of course, I was talking. I think that's a good enough reason. There's nothing more surprising. People ask me the most shocking thing about like doing this podcast, and I always give some answer about, you know, the fact that I get to hang out with so many cool animals, or that I've gotten to share so many stories, or that so many facilities have welcomed me and I'm part of the family now, all of which is true and is important to me. But probably the most shocking thing is that people sit and listen to me.
You have
for like 2 hours a week. Like, Zoo News is mostly just me talking. And people are like, yes, that.
I know. And it's then it's so hard to break it from when you talk to people in real life. Like, when I first met you, I had been like in person. I knew you through Zoom and then social media and was listening to your podcast for a while. And then we first met in person and you were like speaking. And I was like, I just can't not. This is weird seeing you physically and this voice coming out of your mouth.
I remember you and Emily were both here because it was at your house. Yeah. And you just said to come in, which like we had never met in person. So I was kind of like, oh, that's trippy.
Yeah.
And I walked in and both of you were like, ah, it's so weird to hear the voice from a mouth instead of speakers. The funny thing to me about that is that I'll be talking to someone that I just met, right?
Yeah.
Like I met two of your coworkers today, right? And I was talking to Hope at one point. And I was like, you know, so what's your story? And I was like, oh, cool. And she explained that, you know, she just got back from New Zealand. And I was like, oh, so tell me what that experience was like. And I was like, wait, am I interviewing Hope? And then I was like, no. Since all of my interviews are attempts at just like conversational speaking, then sometimes my conversational speaking when I'm meeting somebody, I start to worry that I'm interviewing
them. That you go into podcasts.
Yeah, but I'm not. I'm genuinely like, I wanted to hear about Hope and learn about Hope.
Yeah.
Seems like an amazing person. It was an amazing story.
She just backpacked around New Zealand.
I know,
for
that's
two
so
months.
Cool. But the like, coolest. I was definitely, there was that moment in the back of my head when I was like, okay. Stop interviewing and start
That's
talking.
So
but then the way that I talk, like we're doing right now, like we're off on like our millionth tangent because we're just having a conversation, but it's a great
organic
interview. So yeah, but it is really, it is something that I worry about sometimes. And when I'm meeting people and I'm talking at like, you know, I'll go and I'll play a show and I'll meet some people from the audience or something. And I start asking them questions and I swear to God, halfway through, I'm like, so what's your poop story?
Poop story.
No, wait, no,
it's that
sorry.
On off switch. You just can't turn it off.
Yeah. But so, okay. So we were talking, before I so rudely interrupted myself, about, Henry and how you were working on training, this behavior for the box. And I found this really interesting. So most people who listen probably know this, but if you haven't heard anything with Danny yet, they do bird shows at Southwick Zoo and, they collect dollar bills for donation. They have the bird take the bill and put it in the box. And there's a new box, which is gorgeous.
So pretty.
By the way, it's so nice. Also inspired by NEI. And I find it so, I think it's so cool for people who don't know a ton about training. So now that there's a new box, you kind of have to, retrain isn't the right word for the behavior.
Yeah, you asked me that earlier.
Right. But can you explain why you're doing something that you've, you've had birds doing regularly, but now a new box makes it a new thing?
Yeah, for sure. I love this question. So I, my answer to you is I'm shaping it.
Yes.
So
I love that.
Yeah. Essentially, the dollar bill donation is a retrieve behavior. So the animal takes an object that you have and puts it somewhere that you want it to go. It's very intentional. So the bird, so Henry is trained to take the dollar bill from a person and put it in a donation bin, but our donation bin was this piece of junk. I swear to God, we could never like actually keep a good donation bin. We would just drop them all the time. And because we bought them for like $30 on Amazon, like what did we expect? So we were inspired by the NEI team's gorgeous donation bin. And Emily's dad made this donation bin for us, this beautiful, beautiful donation bin that has a perch on it. And so there's a lot of new criteria to this behavior that Henry knows really well, Ernie knows really well. And so in the past, it's always been take the birds have taken the dollar bill and they travel to their right, our left, to put it in an open, basically box. Like a donation bin, as you know it, as I know it, has a little slit to put the money in. And so they never had to worry about that piece of the puzzle. They just had to bring it down to a very wide open space and drop it inside the space. Now we're asking them to put it inside a smaller region. It's more intentional. There's a lot more, like I said, criteria to it. But not only that, you saw the donation bin and basically the slit is right in the middle, like a normal donation bin, and the perch that the birds sit on is behind it.
Right.
So they have to no longer travel to their right to put it in the container, vestibule, whatever. They have to move their bodies slightly forward to put it in. That's also new criteria.
I would honestly say more than slightly forward.
Yeah.
Like it kind of reminded me of those bin. Like those birds that you put up to like hit a key or something. You know what I mean? Like it really, you have to bend over to
They're
get
gonna
in there.
They're going to have to bend forward.
Yeah.
So that was my thing is they're no longer going to be traveling to their right to put it in like a normal retrieve the way we would train it. And again, this is still a retrieve. It's just not the criteria that they used to have. So now they have to lean their bodies forward and put it in a much smaller space. So there's more steps that they need to complete in order to succeed to earn the reinforcer. So I'm shaping the behavior. I'm making the criteria a little bit more challenging. So we're adding more steps. So I did try putting them on the donation bin just to be like, where are we at? What am I going to have to do? I didn't really know how I was going to have to shape this. When I first saw the donation bin, I was like, okay, that slit is a little smaller than what I would normally probably start this training with, but I don't want to make it bigger and then smaller because I don't want to mess with this beautiful donation
bin. Yeah, it is gorgeous,
Like if we have to, we could make the slit a little bit bigger and then it would just permanently be that way. But it's really cool for them to intentionally really put the dollar bill in. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's too small. Anyway, tangent. So I put them on the, both of them on the donation bin separately. And they were fine on the perches. They had no aversion to this bin. It was just that criteria of needing to do the retrieve forward instead of sideways. So I was like, all right, let's go back to their roots. Let's get them off the donation bin and work on just the retrieve behavior with this new criteria. So I was explaining to John today that I took like a regular old Tupperware container and at first I was just having them put the dollar bill inside the Tupperware container with no lid on it. Then I put the lid on and I cut a hole in the lid at the very top. The hole's pretty big right now. So they have to be intentional about it. They have to, oh, first of all, I'm getting ahead of myself. they needed to learn not to travel to the right. They needed to learn to reach forward to put it in like they're going to do on the new box. Mastered that. So then I put the lid on. Once I put the lid on, it had a hole in it, but the hole is pretty big. So they have to be intentional about putting it in the hole. You saw a few reps where Henry kind of just like tossed it.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, very much so just tossed it. And it made it in on accident. So then as a trainer, I have to be like careful about whether or not I want to reinforce that because it wasn't intentional.
Right.
It was an accident. She happened to succeed. And I want to set her up for success as much as possible. So you come to the conclusion where you have to reinforce some of those, but then you're going to inevitably get a few more that are more intentional than the accidents. And those ones you jackpot.
Right.
And then you start to increase your criteria where the ones that she kind of just tosses it, that's not going to work for you anymore. You're no longer going to get a reinforcer for that. So then she starts to become more intentional. But John was talking, so we didn't get that far today because John was just so exciting.
So exciting.
So
also,
exciting.
The first time that, the very first time she moved right, but I was there.
Right.
And I know that you were trying to figure out, did she move right because that was the old behavior or did she move right to
because
get close to me?
Yeah.
So and that type of thing is so fascinating. To
yeah.
Me, you know?
There's so, and it's important to recognize those things too, though, because that's all pieces of the puzzle that you really have to pay attention to in order to be successful. So, anyway, I was telling John before she even came out, this is my plan. This is what I want her to do. The slit in this container is pretty big, but like I can easily get another cover for this container that's like a little bit smaller, or I can add a piece of plastic to this to make that, you know,
to make the Tupperware
slit match the actual donation bin.
Once you get that.
I was like, what's really cool about this is this little red lid is kind of like a target, which I was impressed that you had noticed that before I even said that to you. I was like, so what I'm going to do is take this red lid and I'm going to put it on top of the existing slit in the new donation bin. So they realize, oh, I need to put the bin in this red thing. And then it's going to go into the big, real, for real donation bin magically. And then I'm going to take that off. And then boom, we have a trained behavior.
Yeah, which is so cool.
It's really cool.
And each step is kind of called a...
approximation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you knew. No, I'm kidding. But I want to make sure everyone listening knows.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, right? No. And I also just love being in a world where, like, as we're discussing this stuff now, like when we were talking earlier, like I was tossing around words like approximation and stuff. And I was
I remember
when we first interviewed each other and I was like, what's a behavior?
Yeah.
What?
Like, and I was like, I don't know, citizen, with a P.
Yeah, I know. That's still one of my favorites. I say citizen way too often because of you. But like, it's been, I think our friendship more than almost anything else reinforces for me how much I've actually learned about this world and grown in this world because of the level of conversations that we have, which is really fun
for me.
Yeah. It's interesting. So that behavior went really well until I became too much of a distraction. And I'm sure you'll work it again, you know, tomorrow or whatever when I'm not there.
Every time we do that, we talk about this though. We're like, that was good information gathered. That was good this, that was good that. Because every training session is a learning opportunity, if not for the birds, then for us. And if we don't take that information and use it to be better next time, either better trainers or to just make the environment better so that our birds can succeed. Okay, so like Henry knows retrieve really well, and I do want her to be able to function when there's people like you around. But she probably wasn't ready for that today because I was still shaping this new behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know going forward that I need her to focus a little bit more when we're working on something a little bit more complex. And then once she's putting those dollars in the bin reliably, I'm going to bring you back for some more, you know, casual conversation while I'm training.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And it's such an interesting thing. So we often talk about the fact that behavior is the study of one animal. And it very much is. And I think I like to think about it that way. And it's so interesting because as much as we kind of understand how animals communicate, and you get to know animals very well, you never, you know, they don't speak English, you know? And so it is interesting watching you and your team gather that information, you know, in regards to what having a John Rossi there does. about animals that you know so well. And mm-hmm. you know them so well, and you kind of had expectations of what mm-hmm. would go well or not. But you weren't really sure because, you know, I remember the one conversation about another bird who had some thoughts about me.
This is a really good segue into what you're about to say.
Yeah. And just this, you know, there was discussion about, oh, okay. So, you know, this bird has done fine with males before, mm-hmm. but a smaller statue male who, stature, not statue, birds just poop on statues. Anyway, a stature male who didn't have facial hair.
Yeah.
And so was I more manly, not in a, you know, not yeah. in a, you know what I mean? But like from the bird's perspective, mm-hmm. was that part of what was going on in this situation? Or is there something else? Or does this bird not like tree kangaroos? Because I have a tree kangaroo hoodie on. Like, you don't really know. And it kind of goes back to our very first interview when you told me about how when you wore a headband around Kinta, yes. a kookaburra that mm-hmm. you raised from hatchling, basically.
Mm-hmm. Who didn't care about you at all today, which
no, she did so
surprised.
Well.
She was
I know.
So nice to you.
But, and I went over and saw her a couple of times.
Yes.
It was great. But, you know, you wore a headband and suddenly you were a stranger and then the headband came off and you were fine. And mm-hmm. it's who would expect that? Who would think that?
Yeah.
So it is always interesting watching the behavior gathering, you know, the information gathering.
And then we always have to write that stuff down. As you saw me doing at the end of the day, cursing my computer because I was just being a jerk.
Ugh, that was so sad.
It was so sad.
But yeah, so talk more about the Conyers.
Okay, so another plan of mine today, plan of attack, was to train our Conyers. So we, in the past, have had two Sun Conyers named Polly and Piper, and they were a duo. They were a force to be reckoned with. They were incredible free-flight birds. Unfortunately, tragedy struck this past fall. We lost Piper. So Polly was now by herself. She Aww. Always had a buddy. It was very sad. So we decided to attempt to introduce her to our Jende Conyer Clyde, who also had a mate, for a really long time. But his mate passed away and he has been by himself for a while. He was always, not to label, but a bird that was very difficult for multiple trainers to work with at once because of his history of always having had protected his mate. Suddenly his mate's not there and I don't think he knew what to do with all of that. I think he was always protecting his mate. And when she was gone, he just never fell out of that instinct. And so he has a really strong reinforcement history of flying at unfamiliar people, not in a show. But in the barn, which makes sense. We're near his nest.
Yeah, that's
near
his home. Yeah.
His territory. It's his home. But yeah, in a show setting, he's this flawless little guy that flies out into the audience, sometimes has even landed on audience members and they like pose for a selfie. Like everything's fine. But when he's in the barn, it's a different story. So Clyde and Polly were successfully introduced to each other over the end of the fall, early winter. They've been doing really well together. We've noticed that Clyde is so much more tolerant of new people now. I don't really get it because it is another mate. So you would think he would treat this mate the same that he treated his other mate and just kind of want to attack people. But he seemed to have this little bit of a change of heart, which is also funny because he's just definitely this really old bird. So I'm like, oh, Clyde's like in his senior years. He just doesn't care anymore. Like, we love this for Clyde. So we were like, he's a changed bird. And so today I was like, Emily had the idea of trying to, so Clyde does this nest box behavior in our show, which we love. He flies onto these platforms and then crawls into a nest cavity. We talk about how Jende Conyers nest in the wild. We're like, this is precious. Now he can do it with a mate. And she's a really good flyer too. But that's complex because we have to teach her nest cavity. We're also teaching Clyde how to fly with another bird, which he had never done before. So that's been a challenge for him. So we're like, maybe we could try something completely different. We still have goals for nest box behavior, but Emily had the idea of having them fly through arms of audience members. So audience members lining up, getting their arms out in like a bridge and them flying between it. It's great audience interaction. We love this idea. This is really challenging for Clyde because he has a history of flying at random people aggressively. So we were like, is he the right tool for the job? So we started playing around with this. We trained, obviously, trainer to trainer recall with the two birds together. That was the first step for them. They did that really well. We started to bring in familiar people holding up their arms. That was going really well. Then we started to bring in people that were more quote unquote problematic for Clyde. So people that he would display those behaviors with. And typically men, typically taller people, shorter hair, facial hair, like John checks all the boxes, woohoo! Unfortunately.
It's the only time I've ever checked all the boxes for anyone, except for Henry, obviously.
Except for Henry, yes. So we did try this, like, with a primate keeper who checks almost all those boxes, except he is a little bit shorter and doesn't have facial hair, so we were thinking that was the only difference today. But anyway, we had Hope, one of our trainers that Clyde knows really well, you know, there with her arms in the bridge, but John was the other half of the bridge. But I didn't think Clyde was quite ready for that yet. So John was standing at least 4 or 5 feet away. Clyde was pretty fluffy the whole time. So
pretty
his
darn
feathers
fluffy.
Were raised, yeah. Which is the first sign of discomfort. So we were like, okay, John, I'm not going to have you come any closer. And I don't like that his feathers aren't down, but he is very focused on me still. He would turn around every now and then to look at you, but then he'd turn around back to me. Mm. So I'd reinforce him. And he was going back and forth between Megan and I. And one thing, not to get ahead of myself, but I did notice when I was going around giving you the tour, refreshing you of everybody, their names, everything, I did see Clyde hold on to the cage bars and do his little, like, I'm going to just sound like an idiot to everyone who's listening, but John's going to get a laugh. He just went, ugh. He just, like, shook his head, like, back and forth really quickly from side to side. And that is the first sign of Clyde is kind of pissed mm-hmm. at the person in front of them. So John being John walked away because he's good at that stuff. And mm-hmm. you noticed right away. Yeah. And you just kept going. And I explained, I was like, ooh, that was interesting because I do want to train him later, but I don't love that he just did that in front of you. I hadn't seen that from him in a while. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't overly surprised when his feathers were raised when we had him out in front of you. So everything was going really well. He's going back and forth between Megan and I. And then he was at my hand. You wouldn't know because you were like, I was looking the other way. And then I turned around.
Right.
Bird was on my shoulder.
Because he was looking like he made eye contact.
He did.
And I was like, I'm just going to look away. And mm-hmm. just like, I know he's a little stressed. Mm-hmm. And then when I turned my head again,
there was
a bird at my nose, basically. Yeah. And I was like, ah!
And so like you turned your head the other way to protect your eyeballs and
yes,
your nose.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I didn't even really give Clyde a chance to react because I went over to him so quickly and he recalled right back to mm-hmm. my hand, which was great.
Yeah, he landed on my shoulder for maybe a second. Like,
yeah,
it was
really
quick. Yeah.
Which, like, yes, in people who are listening who know training really well, we know that maybe Clyde was pushed a little bit too far to get to the point where he did do that to John. But considering how Clyde was previously, mm-hmm. I still felt like it was a pretty big win, even though he did get to the point where he felt the need to fly to you. Mm-hmm. Old Clyde would have flown to a person's ear immediately and
right.
hit their ear.
Right.
He just flew to your shoulder.
He was not aggressive at all. It was only a
aggressive.
Second, but he was not.
Yeah.
When I turned my head back, he was not going for my ear or anything.
Right.
He was sitting on my
and
looking at
right
you.
Back to
yeah,
me.
He came
he
right to
like,
you.
He was like, this is not correct.
And I remember that, I think it was Megan who said that there had just been a noise or something else.
She said Ricky. Ricky.
Okay.
Our Hyacinth Macaw was also screaming the whole time. And I
right.
think there was a particularly loud honk.
And there was.
That he responded to. Everyone knows the Hyacinth honk.
Yes.
And he did. So that's the thing that's difficult.
Yeah. It's a fair question mm-hmm. whether he came at me or was aggrieved by that noise
responding
or and jumping out of the way or mm-hmm. or what. Yeah.
And we can conclude by the body language before we knew his feathers were raised. Mm-hmm. We knew he was looking at you, but he was also still looking at us for information on what to do. And then that happened. He came right back to me, mm-hmm. but then he was like ready to go back to Megan.
Yeah, he was fine. He kept
wanted
going.
To keep going.
Yeah.
So I made the decision not to put him home. It ended up being a great decision.
It was.
Because we did a couple more reps. Mm-hmm. I felt confident about the decision to keep you where you were because the ultimate plan was for you to be the second half of
right.
the bridge.
Right.
And that was great information for me. I realized he's not ready for that yet. Mm-hmm. But even just having, like, people listening are not really going to understand, but people who are listening who maybe know Clyde, it's shocking that we even had that many people able to be in his presence doing trainer-to-trainer recall with him next to a mate, right next to his cage. Like that is all those factors were something that he was react to before. So I still think he is just a changed bird in a way.
I agree with you 100%.
And it's just, it was really fun. It was really good information. Again, still opportunity for us to do better next time with the information that we had. Mm-hmm. I loved that the whole team and obviously the person who was involved as you was paying really close attention to that body mm-hmm. language. We were really lucky that everybody was really focusing on that. But like at one point, I remember both me and Megan were like, he's definitely like, we don't like to label, but he seemed a little bit angry. Mm-hmm. Like, his feathers were up. I could have put him away in that moment, and who knows if that would have been the better decision or not. We challenged him, which I think was great. He challenged us, which I think was great. And I think we learned a lot on both sides. So it was a really, really good session.
Absolutely.
And I was really happy about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it was fantastic. And I think that it's hard in your world, mm-hmm. because these animals, they train with the same people every day. They get to know the same people every day. They see the same people every day. Now, yeah. there's shows, and that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you said, you can bring in primate keepers and stuff yeah. like that. But they're probably wearing the blue zookeeper shirt.
Yeah, don't have the opportunity that we had today.
Right. How often do you get somebody who's a stranger, mm-hmm. but who also knows and understands and is trusting and trustworthy enough where, like, yo, if I got bit today, I'm not suing. I'm bragging about bleeding from a bird. It didn't happen, but like, so what? Like, I'm part of this world. I get it. And we're fine, mm-hmm. you know? And you said that to me at one point. You were like, you know, when I was hanging out with Russell trying to get a picture, like, if you get pecked, that's on you. And I was like, yeah, I know.
And I know you had heard that before.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. Steve Martin said the same thing. Yeah.
And I was like, if he can say it, I can say it.
A lot of people, when I'm doing zoo things, mm-hmm. say that to me. They say, if you want to go in for this pick, you know what claws you're getting near, you know what you're doing, and I do. And so I think that's not, again, talking about things that I never really expected from the podcast, but like, it's almost like a weird little service that I could offer today. Yeah. I was this amazing training opportunity mm-hmm. to see what was basically a stranger for these birds. I'm still convinced Russell remembered me because he came right does. Over. We were hanging yeah. out. Plus, he's a Corvid. They're so mm-hmm. smart. But, you know, a lot of those other birds don't know me or don't remember me. And they got to have a complete stranger who was also watching their behavior and knew what to do and is comfortable around animals and even willing to take a bite or two for the team. You know, yeah. should have come to that. Didn't today. Mm-hmm. But I mean, my list productive. Of animals that have snacked on me has yeah. gotten pretty, pretty full lately. So, yeah. you know, I'm okay with it. So I do think that is a really cool thing. Mm-hmm. And I, for anyone listening from another facility, if you need a training dummy, I volunteer as tribute. I love doing this kind of thing. Now, one thing that I wanted to discuss, in case y'all can't tell, this is going to be all about training, apparently. It kind of happens. But I noticed a couple of things that I found really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so we've had a lot of trainers on. We talked a lot about training. But you don't use verbal cues. You don't use verbal reinforcers. Mm. And you also...
Okay, never mind.
Okay, if I'm wrong, you know, correct
no,
me.
No, you're correct.
Okay.
I was going to say bridge, but we all know that is essentially a reinforcer. So.
Yeah. And so, and also bridges. Do animals even take a bridge from what we think they do? It's a whole conversation. Yeah. But, and you also, when you give a cue, you since it's a nonverbal, mm-hmm. You tend to take it away very quickly if you don't get the behavior you want. Mm-hmm. And I would love to discuss all of that and
oh my God,
what your thoughts are.
Just have me go on a tangent about all those things.
Heck yeah.
Okay. Well. That,
by the way, folks, in case you're wondering what our friendship is like, that's literally what we did at dinner for like so 40 long. Minutes. It was amazing.
We got a free appetizer out of it.
We did. It was so
our
great.
Our waitress was like, you guys are awesome. The app's on me. I was like, are you it's so kidding good. Me? She was so nice.
Oh, it really was. We're awesome. But yeah. anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So, well, John asked me, I was training Russell. He was the last bird we trained. Everybody, the barn was so loud today.
Oh my gosh. I have recordings. I recorded some of the craziness.
So loud.
Yes.
My watch kept telling me that I'm going to be deaf in 5 years, which we all know.
Yeah.
But maybe not 5 years.
I'm a drummer and that room hurts my ears.
I know, it's so
like,
bad.
And I do not play soft. Like, yeah, it's crazy.
We do our best to keep screaming to a minimum. And they really don't scream that much unless there's an unfamiliar person around.
And this is true of birds and staff.
Everybody was yelling. So the culprits are usually Sugar, our umbrella mm-hmm, cockatoo. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the worst today.
No, but when he joins the party,
goodness. Yeah, he did join the party. He has FOMO. Like, he will not, like, he needs to join. Mm-hmm. So anyway, mostly Sugar and Ricky are highest in the cog. That's the one that most likely honked during Clyde's session. So Ricky really will go at it, especially if there's an unfamiliar male presenting person in the presence. And so he for sure was. And when Russell was out, Russell... pays attention to visual cues. This was something that I thought was super interesting that John asked me after I put him away. But throughout Russell's whole session, first of all, it's limited space. So I have to be really careful about queuing down the corridor. I was explaining this to you. There's not enough space for Russell and I to go together. I told you that we've like collided before trying to like go together. I'm like, come on, pal. And he's like, ah, you have so much hair. And so he'd like fly away and get confused. So I have since learned that I just have to cue him by pointing to where I want him to go. But John had asked me after, what did you ask me? You were like, do you use visual cues on purpose, or is it because it's just so freaking loud in here that you just don't think Russell would hear you? I was like, that's a valid point. That's super true. But actually why I do that particularly with Russell is because out of the show arena, we tried a verbal cue in the form of a whistle, and Russell seemed to not understand where that was. Our bleachers aren't like far enough apart for him to be able to distinguish the left side from the right side. So I felt like he was guessing. Like he'd hear the cue and he'd know that means he needs to take off and fly, but he didn't know which trainer to go to. So I didn't like that he was being given the opportunity to guess. So I really wanted him to first look for the information, see where it was coming from, and then go to it. So giving him an opportunity to gather the information from the environment first and then respond. And so that worked really well for Russell. So I adapted that like same exact thing in the barn for those reasons, but also for the reasons, like you said, like you can't hear anything in there. Sometimes when I'm training a parrot and I'm cueing a vocal, I'll notice that they're just like shouting out something random because they can't freaking hear me. And sometimes I have to get down and get really close to them and be like, can you say hello? They're like, huh, what? So yeah, when it gets too loud, we kind of just have to stop for a minute. But anyway, I was using those visual cues for Russell for that reason. You were asking me about that. And then you also asked me today whether or not we use a bridge.
Right.
And you were like, do you think it's just your hand coming up, your hand going into your treat pouch? And I said, that's exactly it. Like you answered it before I could even answer it, because you've heard this before. You said Wouter had this really
Wouter
nice
and Jake Belair,
I
have talked to both about and this a little bit. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is we always either our hand rests in our treat pouch because we don't want to show them what's in it for them after they do the behavior. So I'm not dangling treats in front of their face. My hand is either behind my back or already in my treat pouch. If it's in my treat pouch, excuse me, stop it.
I can edit that one. I won't, but I can.
I'm going to start back. Okay, we'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to why that's happening.
Yeah, later.
Okay. If my hand is already in my treat pouch, then if I make this subtle movement lifting my hand up, I've already told the bird that they did the correct behavior. They're paying so much attention to that hand already. And I've seen interns do that on accident before, because it's hard when you're training somebody like on correct criteria.
Right.
Because if Sugar says hello, but it's not as clear as I want it to be, he'll say hello, I'll say good, and then the intern knows to reach their hand up to give the treat. Good isn't Sugar's bridge. It's basically I'm telling the trainer that that was good enough. So the birds are just so focused on where our hands are going. So that's essentially the bridge. And I think you were saying that Wouter had the conversation of a lot of times people use a bridge, but the bridge that they think is the bridge is not what the animal thinks is the bridge.
Right.
And so you get a whole slew of problems when that happens. And I just never really found it beneficial to use an auditory bridge. Sometimes I say good. So I guess Russell does know good for outside. But that's like, it's just to buy you time if you can't deliver the reinforcer fast enough. If there's too much space between you and the bird and you can't get that reinforcer to them right away, then yes, it's beneficial to have a bridge. When we're inside, and especially when we're training the parrots one-on-one and they're right in front of us, it's just my bridge is my hand going into my
I was
going to
say, you still have a bridge. It's not that you don't have a bridge. It's just that it's a nonverbal and it's not a click.
Right.
I would love to see a study done at a place that uses a traditional clicker for a bridge, where basically keepers do the motion, maybe even holding the bridge at first, maybe the clicker rather, without clicking. I bet it would get the same exact reaction,
you're right.
Except maybe with certain species that are basically blind and hear the click. But outside of that, just like I also wonder if, you know, if like say a pinniped keeper, right? You know, goes, okay.
Yeah.
You hear that a lot. If they went, and they just moved their mouth mm-hmm. and they got excited face and the same, mm-hmm. you know, what is the bridge that the animal is seeing? Is it all of it? Is it part of it?
Right.
You
know, we'll never
it's fascinating.
Know.
No, you
Unless
can't.
Unless we have someone yeah. that's like really paying attention or whatever.
Well, even then you might not
yeah.
know what mm-hmm. they're seeing, what they're experiencing. You might not even realize that when you reach back to your pouch, mm-hmm. your left shoulder comes forward before your right hand starts to go
yeah,
back.
Who
to
was talking
and maybe that's what they're watching.
Who said that one time? That exact example.
Oh, that's weird. I don't know. Maybe I have it in the back of my mind, but I thought I was being
Someone
brilliant.
Someone was saying something
I always
shoulders.
Think I'm being brilliant. But yeah, yeah, I don't know. But it's an interesting concept that like there are so many things that we do. And mm-hmm. I've never thought of this until just now. So it's kind of really nerdy and funny. But mm-hmm. So I'm a big football fan. Mm-hmm. And that surprises a lot of people. But mm-hmm. one of the things that I love about it is that there's a real like chess match element to it that a lot of people don't realize. And when you really learn a lot about the game, one of the things that happens like up front with the linemen is they will spend all week watching film of the linemen they're going up against. And like there are linemen who sometimes, if there's going to be a run to the left, they take their left foot and they just slide it to the left a little bit. And they're not doing it intentionally. It just will help better anchor them. And they know that. So they unintentionally do that. But if you catch that on the film, then every time you see that foot turn and you just shout out, run to the left. Mm-hmm. And you can like blow up an entire team's game plan mm-hmm. with little stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's all just behavior analysis. And, mm-hmm. and I, you know, I find it very interesting. It's kind of the same concept of what
yeah,
we're talking about
yeah.
here, where is reaching for the pouch. The thing
really,
is,
I
yeah,
just realized it was from know? Drinking out of Toilets podcast. Hannah, what's her name?
Oh, I don't know that podcast.
Oh,
interesting.
Okay. Well, she was talking a bit about prompts and such, and that was one of them. Something with dog training with the shoulder.
Oh, cool. Which
me.
I did not listen to, which means I was being brilliant.
I know. I feel
so
really bad
welcome.
That I can't remember her last name, but she's brilliant. Yeah.
That's cool. Very mm-hmm. cool. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think all of that is just so fascinating.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope y'all are enjoying this deep dive into behavior. If you're not, you gave up a long time ago.
Yeah, it's nice knowing you.
But so, yeah, the last thing that I want to talk about in that world is the, since you have nonverbal cues,
yeah.
right? Like you hold up a perch is a great example. Mm-hmm. You want a bird to come to a perch, what do? You hold up the perch.
Yeah, you noticed that when I was training Brock, you said today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and if you don't get the response that you're looking for,
the opportunity goes away.
Immediately drop that perch,
yeah.
right? And then you give it again, and mm-hmm. we'll oftentimes try to get the focus back and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But can you talk about that strategy? Because what I've seen from a lot of trainers, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a little different because they're verbal cues, but
they're like, yoo-hoo, you
yeah.
paying attention? Come
yeah.
on, come on, come
or, and I admit, even with Paradiddle, with one of my yeah. dogs that I work on stuff with, especially without, you know, mm-hmm. letting go of a thing when we're tugging or something, right? Because mm-hmm. she gets really into play. And so I will, and now I need to stop doing this, I think, mm-hmm. but I will say, you know, Paradiddle, out. And if she keeps tugging, sometimes I will let the thing go slack and I'll just go, what did I say? Which I know is dumb. I know she can't hear mm-hmm. me, but like I'm giving her this second opportunity. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times she does out at that point. I'm like, that's so fascinating. What have I trained? And what is it where if she hears me say that, like, what have I inadvertently done just by
yeah.
treating you like you understand English? You know, I want to break that one down. Mm-hmm. But I see a lot of mammal trainers in particular that'll, mm-hmm. you know, sit. Hey, I said sit. Are you going to sit? Sit, sit, sit. Sit, 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 sit.
Now all of a sudden sit doesn't have value.
Right. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. really interesting. So can you talk yeah. about why you in particular take the opportunity away?
Yeah. So this is a concept. Well, before I get into the science of it, I just said, like, you just gave a good example of like giving the cue a million times. The cue no longer holds value when there's so many fails to respond. And we inadvertently and accidentally reinforce latency. The animal does not learn the value of responding quickly to a cue. The cue starts to matter less. And so this is really interesting. There's this concept called the limited hold, and it's just basically, that's what the science tells us that it is. And it basically means that an animal has a limited opportunity to perform a behavior once the cue is presented in order to earn that reinforcer. So you're going to see them respond to a cue quicker if they have a short window of opportunity to earn that reward. And so we use that science in our training to facilitate that quick response. And so if I am sitting there holding up the cue for Brock, which is either the T-perch or my hand, first of all, if I'm asking that bird to even do a behavior when he's not paying attention, that's my first mistake.
Right. That's just an antecedent disaster.
That's just terrible. So I want to wait until the bird is looking at me. You notice that with Brock a lot today. He was also pretty jazzed about your presence. Mm-hmm. And yep. we saw a yep. lot of eye pinning, tail fanning, some very interesting behavior. So there weren't as many opportunities that he was like looking at me. But as soon as I noticed that he was looking to me for information. I want to reinforce that by offering him some information. Here's your cue. The cue at first was the T-perch, and you saw a pretty quick response to the T-perch, but if you didn't, the T-perch went down. Mm-hmm. I was explaining that to you, and I was like, I want to take away his opportunity to earn this reward because he needs to learn about the consequence of not being able to earn that reward quickly. And so that's this whole limited hold concept. And it's there's been some really fascinating papers written about it. And another really good example is just comparing it to animals' behavior in the wild. And if we think about it with a hawk sitting in a tree who's actively hunting and they're hungry and they're ready for a meal, well, if they see a prey species and they hang out and they aren't fast enough to dive down and talon it, then the animal's going to run away and they miss their opportunity. And they learn pretty quickly that they're not going to earn that reinforcer. They're not going to eat that day. And so then survival of the fittest kicks in. So nature is designed to operate in this way where they're learning from their consequences. And so we're taking advantage of this theory and applying it to our training so that we can strengthen these behaviors. And so that's what's really fascinating about the science to me. And so we use it with all of our birds. We were talking earlier about how I've really been learning a lot about particularly how it can be applied to like carnivores mm-hmm. and animals who, you know, have that really big urge to basically fight for their food. And they learn really quickly the consequences of having that opportunity taken away. And sometimes it looks like, you know, if they're really slow, I feel like they're not responding really well, they're probably not all that motivated for the session. I might take away their opportunity to have an entire training session and come back an hour later.
Right.
And they're maybe a little bit more motivated, paying attention a little bit more. The antecedents make more sense. Like the environment, first of all, the animal needs to be set up for success. We want to look at the environment first. We want to make sure that there are plenty of opportunities to look to the trainer for information. Mm-hmm. We were training with the Sariemas today, and Gabby and Ralphie, the white-handed gibbons, you're laughing because I said Sariemas because
yes,
I said it the right
that's
way.
That's how you say it correctly. That's how you say yes, it. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes. Some people don't say
Some
it
people
that
don't
way.
Say it that way.
They're wrong.
They're wrong.
Dylan.
It's fine. I still love you. Anyway, Gabby and Ralphie are white-handed gibbons. We're watching Bluey today. It was a treat from me.
It was a treat for you.
It was a treat for me as well. But it was very distracting for Pongo and Purdy. The intro to that show, the theme, what do they call this? Music guy, help me out.
The theme song.
The theme song. Thank
yes.
you.
It's a very weird song because it has different time signatures, but that's a whole other conversation.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's really catchy. Pongo and Purdy clearly were pretty enthralled with it because they like would stop and they'd listen and I'd be like, ugh. Like we'd take away their opportunity, but it was a distraction and it was an antecedent that they were maybe not ready for. So we kind of had to play around with that antecedent. I did not go and shut off Bluey because Gabby and Ralphie would have gotten really mad at me. But
and no, you would have been sad. But go ahead.
No, they were refocusing and they were better. But that's just an example of something in the environment that can distract an animal. So it's hard to think in those moments, do I want to completely take away their opportunity to earn any sort of reinforcement, or do I want to just adjust the antecedents to set them up for success? So that's the thing that we do first.
Mm-hmm.
Once we adjust the environment to set the animal up for success, then we really also have to use that in coordination with managing our reinforcers, you know, giving a jackpot for the things, the behaviors that were really good for Pongo, for example. But if we see a snake slam that was like kind of weak or not on the rock like we want to see, we're either not going to reinforce that at all, or we're just going to give them a chick wing, which is way less valuable than mouse guts. So we want to play around with our reinforcers. We want to use those short windows of opportunity. We want to make sure the antecedents are in place. And that's all So much goes into a training session. Those are all the things that we need to think about. And it's a lot.
It is. Not to mention individual personalities.
Yes.
And paying attention to how they're acting. Like you said, one of the things I love that you said is like, if they're being less responsive, mm-hmm. you want to do the limited window that you were talking about,
yeah.
but also you need to understand that like, oh, maybe they're not feeling this right now and
right.
they need to have some choice and control. And
yeah,
so you
exactly.
can give them that opportunity.
And it's not
yeah.
just like, oh, I'm going to come back an hour later because they'll be hungrier then. Like, no, I want them to learn the consequence of losing that window of opportunity. Mm-hmm. But that could look like something as simple as, taking the snake away from Pongo and resetting it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm taking that opportunity away from you, but I'm giving it back immediately. Let's see if you learned that quickly from the, you know, your lack of response from the last time. And if that's not enough, then yeah, maybe we need to scale back a little bit more, but we want to keep setting them up for success. We want to keep coming back later. We want them to get those good slams in and those good repetitions in. We just want them to do it in a timely manner because
yeah.
otherwise the cues mean nothing. Because otherwise I'm going to be standing out there on the bleachers saying to Russell, come on, Russell, what are you doing? Come over here. Come on, buddy. A, I look like a fool. B, Russell doesn't care about what mm-hmm. I'm doing. I do it all the time. It means nothing to him. So we need this conversation that we're having with our animals to be as clear and concise and manageable and absorbable to them as possible. And that's all we're doing. We're creating a conversation. We're setting them up for success. We're setting ourselves up for success and we're learning together.
Mm-hmm. And whether it's in a show arena, but also like so many of the behaviors that are trained in zoos and aquariums in general are for vet, you know, purposes
yes.
or husbandry things or like emergency recall and
mm-hmm.
stuff. And so you can't train a recall when there is an actual emergency, a storm is blowing up,
mm-hmm.
and I've been here when a storm is blowing up at Southwicks, and y'all have to get those birds, and you have to get those birds fast.
Yeah.
And you can't have rewarded dawdling
yes.
so that, you know, Russell or whoever is out there and it's like, oh, cool, I'm going to get a treat in 12 minutes after I stare at this storm.
Yeah.
And then that bad things will happen. Yeah,
like
no.
Hustle.
So it does really make
hustle.
Sense. The Russell Hustle. Woo! And we have a title of the episode. But no, it really does. I do think that it makes a lot of sense. Sometimes I think things seem harsh to people that don't understand training.
Yes.
Like, oh, you would take that away. But no, there's an actual reason for it.
Yes.
And it actually matters.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I just want to point out again is that you don't, like, you have not taken away their food for the day.
Correct.
Or something like
yeah.
that. They're still going to get it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that is very important to understand.
Absolutely.
Because mm-hmm. I think in that moment, if somebody saw that or just heard you say that, oh, I took away the opportunity to
it
to
doesn't
earn
mean
food,
we take away the meal.
Right. Their
yep.
diet is not going away.
Correct.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think so many animals would do so much less training if they realized that they were just going to get the same stuff anyway.
Yeah, they'd be like, what?
Like, wait, why am I working
I
for this?
Yeah.
I can lay on the couch right now.
I don't care. Yeah, and that's a really good point, though. Like, it's really good for their welfare. And animals
mm-hmm.
who tend to work for their food and for us to challenge them in a way that they're challenged in the wild, like, they tend to be a lot healthier,
mm-hmm.
a lot more you know, mentally stimulated, physically stimulated. We want to try to emulate. We want to give them as much stimulation in that way as possible. They're getting so much great enrichment from being trained and getting that interaction with us. You know, it's really rewarding process. And I think it's really good for them too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I know it's slightly different talking about dogs, but that is what I spend a lot of time with.
Yeah.
And one thing that fascinates me is Paradiddle, you know, our black lab who is
mm-hmm.
just cuckoo banana pants.
Mm-hmm.
Paradiddle loves fetch.
Mm-hmm.
Loves fetch. And when I go out and play fetch with Paradiddle, I launch that ball as fast as I can and come every time. Just go, go, go. Because
mm-hmm.
she loves fetch and I can wear her out and it's great, right?
Yeah.
When Zoe plays fetch with Paradiddle, she will do like ask for behaviors between throws. And the first time I saw her do it, I'm not going to lie, even though I fully know that she is much more an expert on dogs and training than I am, I thought to myself, oh, this is silly. This is a terrible idea. What a horrible antecedent to give a dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite thing to do is go play fetch, to throw this ball. And you're now going to delay that when the ball's already in the chuck it and everything to ask for a paw.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. The excitement with which Paradiddle will give that paw
yeah.
or chin or parkour or any of the cues.
Mm-hmm.
Because oh my goodness, does that dog love training? And a lot of animals do.
Yeah, yeah. They find so much value in
it. Yeah, so I've started doing
like
it more now.
And you're like reinforcing a behavior by asking for another behavior.
Yeah.
I love that concept.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I find Paradiddle has become more and more of my, you know, training, just kind of tryout, really, you know? And like the other day I was having a problem with her. The reason I asked about the nonverbal cues and the volume of that room, mm-hmm. other than because my ears were bleeding, was because so Flam, our other dog, is very barky, very loud, very barky, mini Aussie. I regularly get those 95 decibel warnings on my watch just because, and she's very jealous. If you're interacting with Paradiddle, she's going to bark. It's just the thing. And so Perry's out was pretty good for me. And then it started to be a lot worse when we were working on tugging stuff. And the first thing I realized was I wouldn't stop tugging. I would just say the word out. And that's just stupid. That's a terrible antecedent. So I learned that pretty quickly. And I started, you know, relaxing my grip and dropping the tug a little bit. And sometimes I would ask and she would give it 10 out of 10 times. Sometimes I would ask and she wouldn't. And I finally realized Flam is literally barking at her ear. And so recently what I've started doing is making sure that I get the outs in between pause or during the pause,
so she just couldn't
in the
hear
bark.
You.
And she is at like 90% for me now. Sometimes she still gets a little too excited, but what a change. And it was all about changing the antecedent. It had nothing to do with our bond or her understanding of the training or her respect of me as a trainer or any of that crap that was going through my brain.
Yeah.
It was that she was not hearing me say the word out.
Yeah.
And then once she heard me say the word out, bop, it was coming out.
Yeah.
And I quickly realized like her favorite thing, I would often like throw it as a reward because she loves fetching, like I said, but she really loves tugging in that moment. She's tugging to tug. So a lot of times what I would do is just shove it back in her mouth. And man, is that a great reward. And it was like, I hadn't thought of any of this initially.
Yeah.
But
there are a lot of reasons why we do those things. I mean, yeah, training birds is one thing. They have such great eyesight, so I can focus a lot on the visual. But you might be training an animal who has real crap eyesight, and you have to use an auditory cue. And then I've heard a lot of people have the conversation or give feedback where in shows, they really don't like to hear those verbal cues between the trainers because that takes away, that distracts people from the conservation message and what's really going on and really being able to watch the animal perform that natural behavior. And then it looks a little bit more curated. And then all of a sudden we're focusing on the training, which someone like you and I would love, but like it would just interfere with the dialogue of the show. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the conservation message, all of those things. So we try to avoid having those verbal cues or those types of cues in a show setting. When you have one person talking and the other people are doing the training back and forth, for certain animals, it makes more sense. Mm-hmm. And that's why people do it. But for us and with the birds and our unique setting, it doesn't make sense for us. So we want to stay away from those. Yeah.
It makes sense. Was there anything else that you wanted to throw out about training or topics or anything like that?
About training. We covered a lot of really good stuff.
We did. I really liked this. Yeah,
me
no.
too.
So, okay, then a couple final questions before we get to the last two, though. I have to ask, why have you been burping throughout my whole podcast? Is something going on? Anything you want to tell everyone?
Definitely going on. Everyone who has ever birthed a child knows that, I guess, before you birth a child, when you're pregnant, which I am.
That's what we were on for. What a great way to announce that. Wow.
When you're pregnant, which I am.
It's a good thing that you're a trainer because you are a terrible, like, you know, just, announcer of things.
Announcer of big news, it makes me feel weird.
I get that.
It makes me feel like the center of attention.
Says the subject of my podcast. But yes, go ahead.
I don't like it. Yeah, so I am 19. I said this earlier. You asked me how far along I was, and I was like, I don't know. I think like 18, 19 weeks pregnant at this point, which is almost halfway. And I burp a lot. A lot comes out of my mouth. A lot of things happen in my stomach and come up. I've got heartburn. I've got all the things.
So I'm curious, what behavior were you rewarding Paul with 18 or for 18
wait a second.
I did. I just want to know what he did. He clearly did something well. He got a nice reward. And that's what we call a jackpot. So, you know.
Oh, God. Well, this kid screaming and crying in all hours of the night can be his reward and his jackpot.
Yeah, so, fair. That? Oh, my goodness. All right. So, conservation organization you'd like to give a shout out to?
I probably am the only person that brings this up. And I've brought it up before, but I want to say it again because I'm really proud that we sponsor this organization every year. We've been partnering with Armonia for the last several years through another nonprofit called the Bird Endowment that sends funds to Armonia directly. And they've created some blue-throated macaw nature reserves in honor of these wonderful people, Lainey Rickman, who I used to know before she tragically passed away in 2017. Her sister now carries on her legacy of the Bird Endowment and is just such a nice, great, wonderful human being doing things for conservation. And we really appreciate her and the relationship we've fostered with her. And it means a lot to us. And we talked a lot about training Henry for dollar bill donations. And when she puts that dollar in the donation bin, that's where it's going. And I'm really proud of that now that I think about it. I've always been proud of it. But now that we started this in 2015, and it is now 2024, and I'm realizing that that is 9 years of supporting Armonia and the Bird Endowment and blue-throated macaw conservation. And that's really exciting. Next year will be 10 years of that. Oh my God.
That's so cool.
That's wild. Yeah. So we have a lot of nest boxes out there in our name, Earth Limited at Southwick Zoo. And we've had macaws fledge from those nest boxes. And they also have data and research to support that those blue throats who actually breed there come back the following breeding season, and they breed in that same location, which is really exciting. So yeah, big shout out to the Bird Endowment in Armonia.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Very cool. And then it is time.
It's time now, don't you know? We've come to the end of the show, but there's one tale left to go. You're gonna laugh and say, oh no. It's time for the Rastafari poop story.
Well, we've been doing so much carnivore training lately. We've been really into the Sariema, the Kookaburra, the Russell, all of that stuff. So there's just carnivore guts everywhere. And we are cutting up, I don't know, I feel like I've already said this one before, it might be lame, but I'm going to say it again. No. I have a good one.
You're
wait,
so good
did
at this.
I already say this one before? I think I did.
No one knows. Just say it again.
Okay, no one remembers. I was at the aviary one time. I don't know if I ever said this. I might have said this as my poop story.
Poop story.
Now I'm self-conscious. But I was in the aviary. This was pre-COVID, so I wasn't wearing a mask. But it was like right before COVID had started. And I was having a conversation with my coworker, and we were chiseling parakeet poop off the wall. And you guessed it. We were talking. I chiseled one right into my mouth.
Amazing.
A hard parakeet poop.
Amazing.
But where I was going with the guts,
yeah.
There have been a lot of kookaburra clacking. You know how they do that?
Mm-hmm.
They get the guts off their face by clackety clacking. Yeah, that's gone in my mouth too.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. Kinta did not do that today. She just had guts on her beak. It
was like,
weird.
She doesn't even know.
No, yeah, it was very weird.
It was outside of her line of vision, but there was like some little intestines right on her beak.
Yeah.
And I was like, look at her. She looks so dumb.
So dumb. But so cute.
So cute.
Oh my goodness. Well, as always, thank you for chatting.
Yeah, I always have so much fun when we do these things.
Okay, well, if that was half as much fun for you as it was for me, then I know that you loved this episode. And even if it was less than half, hey, whatever, I don't really care, because there was lots of good stuff. And every once in a while, you know, it's just fun to hang out with your friend while nerdily obsessing about training and also making fun of each other. So, yeah. But I do appreciate y'all being here. I appreciate y'all listening, especially my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Shank, Dr. Stephen Williamson, Barbara Bennett, and Jenny Owens. And this has gone long enough, so the last thing I'll say is just remember, folks, the word credits backwards is Steiderk. The Rastafari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rastafari or by email at rastafaripod@gmail.com. Rastafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.